You're listening to Montezuma Mixtape. On this show, we provide evidence to the claim that everyone has a story to tell.
It's the story we tell around the campfire when we warm our hands and ears are open.
The story we tell on the first date to conjure laughter from across the table.
It's a story that brings a party to a huddle as the night becomes a brimming reservoir of curiosity and superstitious happenstance.
These stories are heartwarming or disturbing, God's honest truth or a load of bunk.
To put it simply, these stories are good stories, moving, memorable, and repeatable.
The purpose of this show is to cultivate the stories that come from our neighbors' mouths, give them a megaphone, and show that a small town is, without exception, full of big stories.
The second component of this show is music. Music to show how stories find new expression in other mediums and art forms that place us deeper into a thatching.
Each episode, there will be an original mixtape that aligns with the story, not necessarily stylistically, but thematically.
So listen close and connect the dots. Today we're here with Stacy Couch. Stacy is a shamanic practitioner and author of Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. Stacy, can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yes. This is the story of my discovery of the shamanic way and my relationship with a couple of hawks that helped me discover this path and discover myself in the process.
Wonderful. So let's hear a little from the book.
To the lonely and sacred island within us all, and the divine spirits that cross open oceans to make our acquaintance there. Day after day of fog rolled through. I couldn't understand where all the fog was being created. It seemed as if from some bottomless void. The wind blew steady in excess of 50 miles per hour, carrying a thick marine layer across the island. Somehow, despite the driving wind, the dense land cloud barely shifted its location. I was lucky to be able to see more than 30 yards most days. Birdsong did not carry on the wind. It seemed that whenever the blustery weather did cease, all the avian life took the opportunity to forage and sleep rather than wander or sing. The circular track in my mind became a tunnel. When I grew weary of listening to the repetitive chatter, I released myself to the wind and fog and sat empty in despair. When the depression threatened to swallow me, I fired up a dramatic inner conversation. Finally, sometime in early March, my world was stamped with the passage of time. Thank whatever god rules this island. The wildflowers bloomed. The rolling slopes of lupin below my cabin windows acquired a lovely lavender hue. I was lifted by flaming stalks of red buckwheat and enchanted by deep fuchsia owl clover faces dotted with yellow and white. Entire hillsides below my cabin were soaked in coreopsis gold. I waded in sunshine. Along with the burst of color on the island, I acquired company on my walk to and from the harbor overlook each morning. Each morning as I crossed the runway and started on the trail, I heard an approaching keen. At first her cry blared, then faded, but as it got closer, it turned into a ceaseless yelling. The female harrier hawk appeared, coursing straight at me, her dark eyes piercing mine and her brown wings flapping sharply. She came right at eye level, set on running me down, mouth open, screaming like mad. The trail was gently sloped, bearing me hard upon her. Just as we were about to collide, I abruptly swiveled on my feet to follow the turn of the path downhill. She immediately pivoted on her wingtips to mirror me. We traveled in tandem, my feet and her wings falling in unison. She hovered just 10 or 15 feet above my left shoulder. At times, she'd have more to say, and I'd turn to her with some smart quip. "Wonder where I'm going this morning, madame?" Other mornings we'd travel in silence, listening to each other's movement and breath. She became so accustomed to me that I often found her waiting at an old fence post at the turn in the trail. She'd lift off as I approached and take position at my left flank. Her mate was usually in attendance, but he hung back and watched from afar. The morning company of the Harriers brought me limitless solace. Not only did they offer me much yearned-for companionship, but they sparked a sense of magic in my being that I hadn't remembered. I felt a kind of wonder that brought me out of the scientific detachment I clung to so desperately. With the Harriers, I didn't have to pull away and remain swirling in my intellectual dialect. I wasn't required to pose theories and assign numbers to their movement. I was afforded the opportunity to respond and offer the chance to be a part of the experience. During my enchanting walk each morning, I re-entered a childhood of the natural world. My movement into hawk territory was no guilt-heavy intrusion into a place I didn't belong, but rather a visit home. Here I acquired a sense of awe, akin with the wild ones. The Maiden Harrier's banter was calling me to something bigger than myself, to a purpose I felt stirring in my soul. Summer, I helped discover nesting northern harrier hawks on the island for the first time in recorded history. I watched the young grow and the parents care for them as I delved deep into my own inner quest. After nearly a year on the island, my time there ended and I moved to a small town in the northwest. I started volunteering at a wildlife rehabilitation center and had the incredible and rare fortune of working with a female northern harrier hawk named Talia. I went to see Talia around noon. I was able to coax her onto the stump near the front door with a piece of chick. Once her appetite was whetted, she was eager to come to me. The first pounce on my gloved hand was pure bliss. I watched her slender, long legs dance as her fierce talons gripped my fingers hard. She bent down to tear at the meat with her beak. Now I could absorb the scene rather than worry about how it looked to bystanders. I carried her to a perch with fluid steps as she picked the glove clean. I asked her to step onto the perch and return to my post in the open corner of the mews. We danced, moving and flying from different perches to avoid routine. I wanted every moment, every pounce, to be fresh. She chirped a few times in excitement over the tasty activity. It was all I could do to take in her features through the blur of hunger. Once I finished feeding Talia the meal I'd prepared, I stood by the door for a while to bask in her presence. She stood quietly on her perch, her crop bulging with food, and set to preening her lovely coat. The mixture of colors in each feather was exposed as she chose one and then another to zip into place. She roused, shook her entire coat, and a shock wave of release coursed through my body. Instantly aware of herself, she turned her head to look me in the eye. It was as if to say, "Who is this strange woman in my company today?" I felt her legs and her wings tense just before she leapt to a perch inches from my shoulder. I held my breath. She released her firm grip on the perch and went back to preening. I exhaled. Her feathers relaxed across the contours of her frame and she cocked her head to meet my gaze. My steady breath was all that broke the silence. The Maiden Harrier subtly lifted the foot furthest from me while curling it in a loose ball. Her ebony talons disappeared into the thick down on her belly. She was far from the anxious hawk I'd seen pulling feathers from her legs. Likewise, I was miles from the frightened woman trapped on an island. Here stood our window to salvation.
Walking along on a path in the mountains, I saw a bird flying way up high. Gold were its wings in the sun of the morning, flashing at me as it flew through the sky. Its beauty was such, I felt I must have it. I chased it all day, nearly into the night. Finally angered that I couldn't catch it, determined that I would stop it in flight.
Some weeks later, I had the opportunity to fly Talia from a perch to my glove. I walked an arch to a point 20 to 25 feet away and turned my back to the bird. I kept my hands in front of me and out of her view while stuffing a large chunk of meat into my gloved hand. I double-checked the line to make sure it was firmly under my left foot. Both of my feet were firmly planted in the grass, shoulder width apart. There was little room for doubt here. Talia wouldn't think of flying towards a shred of fear. I took a breath in and let it out, feeling my energy sink into the ground. If I'm going to be a raptor perch, I need to stand rooted like a tree, I thought to myself. I raised my left hand out parallel to the ground, held steady, looked over my left shoulder, and whistled. Talia crouched, her body tense but lithe. Every feather on her body lay smooth in the instant before her wings extended and legs pushed off. Now she was five times the size I'd ever seen her before. I stood from the perspective of a mouse, surprised to a standstill. Her wings drew in and out with my breath, one beat and a quick glide. Two beats and I could feel her stare penetrate my soul. Stretched across my entire line of vision was this fabulous creature. Just as I was sure she was coming straight at my head, she rotated a fingertip. The sound of her feet hitting the leather of my glove was deafening. The clutch she had on my hand was crushing. I reminded my lungs to draw in air while the huntress devoured her prey. This was a split in the canvas, where the world around was no more, and I stood with both feet in another. Here was the infinite spirit I knew lived within this crippled body. Through this vision, she'd offered me a direct link to the vastness beyond the mundane, a sense of hope which I hadn't felt since I couldn't remember how long, welled into the beaming smile on my face. I now held in my heart a true vision of my own soul, along with that of my dear friend. She had leapt over the last gap between my true promptings and myself. What a miraculous gift.
Thank you.
A year later, I was the main trainer for a new red-tailed hawk named Grasha that we were manning or training to work on the glove. Her first experience of being on the glove, surrounded by people, was a miserable failure. She was terrified, and the trust between us was completely broken. Here is where the world of the hawk and shamanism blend. The hawk felt that she was in danger, and saw that I also felt a sense of peril. With her fear confirmed, she completely gave into it. We were in a negative feedback loop, continually reinforcing each other's terror. She was afraid for her life, and I was afraid for our souls. We were both flung into survival mode. I wanted to be a companion with whom she could always feel content. By empathizing with her fear, I was only perpetuating it. My shamanic teacher explained to me that I needed to journey on a ceremony to hide the fear, anxiety, and worry that made me unsuited for my work with the hawk. My ego wanted to believe that if I was a gift to the hawks, then surely I could offer the young red-tailed hawk security and comfort as I stood. But clearly this was not the case. I was, after all, new to the world of falconry, and I had much to learn about my place in it. I humbly accepted the fact that I hadn't yet arrived. I was not able to channel universal love and peace in an upsetting situation. I went on a shamanic journey to Lowerworld via the roots of my tree to meet with Talia. A shamanic journey is a lot like a waking dream. I go into a trance-like state to travel in my mind's eye into the spirit world. I do this with the help of a recording of rhythmic drumming and while laying down with my eyes closed. During the journey, I surrender and direct the experience at once. I explained to Talia that I was in search of a ceremony I could do before entering the Red Tail's cage to work with her. Talia guided me to a mock-up of the barn where the hawk now lived. We walked into the hallway of the barn, and the spirit harrier gave me the following instructions. I was to stand in the hallway with my glove on, state my intent to hide the fears that are not well suited for my time with the hawk, and then whistle for Talia. I paced through the steps she gave me, and soon, as the whistle left my lips, Talia, in spirit form, came flying head-on at me from the north. She landed on my glove, twittering in her lovely voice. I showed her the stone I planned to use in the daily ceremony to hide the fearful pieces of myself. It was a quarter-sized, rough, round lava rock. She politely requested the stone. I handed it to her, thinking she would work it in her beak and then hand it back. Instead, she swallowed it. Oops, I thought to myself. What now? I asked Talia. Blow the anxiety you need to hide into my mouth, so it goes into my belly and then into the stone, she responded. I quickly saw how this was a metaphor for the ceremony she suggested I do every day before entering the Red Tail's Muse. I acted out the physical routine of holding my small cloth pouch with the stone inside in my left gloved hand and whistled for Talia. She flew in and landed on my glove, gripping firmly with her talons. With three scoops of my fingers, I took the pouch into my bare right hand. With the pouch open, I held my lips to its mouth and blew the fears in. While I blew the fears into the pouch, I saw the opening of the pouch as Talia's beak and the inside of the pouch as her stomach. Will I always know what the fear is about? I asked the spirit harrier. Not all of the time, she responded. It made sense that I should focus more on my intention and the ritual than what I was putting aside. In Mary Summer Rain's Guide to Dream Symbols, stomach relates to fortitude, which is defined as the strength of mind that enables a person to encounter danger or bear pain or adversity with courage. The word fortitude comes from the same root word as fortress. In this ceremony, the black stone was to hold my fears while the pouch would serve as a fortress to protect them. Talia was offering her stomach as the metaphor to lend me the courage I needed to hold the red tail through stressful situations. I also had the assistance of antelope medicine for this ceremony. The black stone I had intuitively chosen for this work was a stone I had gathered off the plains of Wyoming after an antelope hunt I rode along for. I was a child at the time, and this was my first visceral brush with death. Without any guidance from the adults around me, I collected a few stones off the ground near the site of the kill. I ached for the soul of the doe that gave her life and eulogized her by carrying these stones like precious jewels. In the book, Animals Speak, there is the following insight about antelope. They have a thick hide, sometimes an inch thick, which helps protect them from the environment. For anyone with an antelope totem, there may either be a need to insulate oneself or a need to come out of hiding. The pronghorn can show how best to work with your insulation and help you develop a new sense of timing in relation to it. According to Native American legends, antelope was the first to give her life to feed man. She also embodied the virtues of courage to start new endeavors and to be of quick, decisive action. So it seems that every time I hid my anxiousness about my work with Grasha, I was receiving a healing. My fear was going to a safe place and was merging with and being nurtured by the energy of decisive action and courage. Now I could see that it was not the act of hiding itself that was causing my inner conflict, but the unconscious way in which I was suppressing my emotions. Now I had entered into a conscious way of working with my fear. I was able to be more of who I truly was.
You've been listening to Montezuma Mixtape, showcasing big stories from a small town county.
Today's guest has been Stacy Couch, author of Gracious Wild. Available at Maria's Bookshop in Durango or Amazon.com. You can find excerpts of the book at wildgratitude.com.
Here at the Montezuma Mixtape, we believe that everyone has a story to tell. If you're ready to tell yours, contact us by sending an email to montezumamixtape@gmail.com.
Montezuma Mixtape is created, produced, and hosted by myself, Greg Harple, and Ian Mott. Our thanks go to our storytellers and to KSJD Dryland Community Radio.
Visit KSJD.org to find full Montezuma Mixtape episodes streaming online.
Join us again next month for another story from Montezuma County.